With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jen Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. We have a big news day today. A lot happened yesterday. Teddy Bridgewater is traded. Sam Darnold is starting. And the Raiders are asking the world for Khalil Mack. Let's dive right in. We start with another record-breaking NFL contract. First, there was Odell. Now Aaron Rodgers, the two-time MVP, became the highest-paid player in NFL history when the Packers signed him to a four-year, $134 million extension that, when all is said and done, could be worth $180 million in total money. All right, Chris Carter, let's dive right in. What sets Aaron Rodgers apart from every other quarterback in the NFL? How did he deserve this money?
Well, the number one thing is his overall ability to be able to throw the football. He has a unique throwing motion. It's as perfect. Like, we haven't seen a quarterback. I said Dan Marino. Dan Marino threw the ball a certain type of way. Elway threw it a certain type of way. Favre threw it a certain type of way. But I said no one that's ever played the game of football throws the football better than Aaron Rodgers. Why? Not only can he throw it deep, that's always the sign of NFL quarterback, the deep throws, the deep comebacks along the sidelines, but he's the most dangerous because he has the big-time arm. He also has the football IQ where he understands the things that defenses can't defend and the ability to be able to pull off heroics late in games. We haven't seen it. If we take, in the last 20 years, if we take the 20 best throws, 10 to 12 of those will be Aaron Rodgers.
If you're talking, so what you're saying is if we were to say, hey, we want to do a segment of highlights of the 20 most wowing plays by a quarterback in the since the year 2000 in the NFL, you think he's got at least half of them?
Absolutely. I mean, he can throw the ball. He can do things with the football. Forget about the Hail Marys. Well, you can't forget about those. How many of those? He had three of those? Two in one game?
Two in one playoff game.
I mean, it's amazing what he has done with the quarterback. We saw, because we went through an era with Peyton Manning, him and Tom Brady. They changed the quarterback position. It's also produced other guys like Drew Brees. But none of those guys is Aaron Rodgers. And his overall athleticism, he can move anywhere in the pocket. He can throw what quarterback coaches call off platform. That means where his feet are not planted stationary up under him. He's probably the best thrower off balance of any quarterback that I've seen. He is really, really special. I remember being there the first day that he was announced as starter when Brett Favre was going through, am I going to retire? And Greg Jennings. And I would actually be on the field reporting and catching balls. And you can tell by the way his ball comes to you because he doesn't have an overpowering ball. Nick and I, we were watching our friend Josh Allen for Buffalo. People talk about he probably has the strongest arm in the NFL.
Already. But that's the only pitch he's got.
Yeah, that's all. He's a thrower of the football. Aaron Rodgers is a pitcher. That means he can throw everything from a baseball analogy. He can throw a change. He can throw a slider. He can throw a curve. We know he's got the heater. But he has the quarterback in position at a certain level that it's hard to see. Man, when guys make bad throws, like you revert back to Aaron Rodgers, how Aaron Rodgers would have thrown that ball. A lot of his highlights, too, watch on his deep passes how the ball does not go very high unless he wants it to go very high. Other quarterbacks, they have to put the trajectory on it to be able to get it there. He's a special player, and we're in a special time to be able to watch him play.
The details on the contract that Jenna laid out, what people, 4 years, $134 million extension, people need to understand this. The Packers got a bargain. Aaron Rodgers, this wasn't some lifetime achievement. Oh, we're going to do. No. The Packers got a bargain.
And Aaron Rodgers should get credit for that.
Absolutely. He should get credit for that. And it is, it's almost not possible to put a value, an accurate value on what he brings to your football team. Mm. He's, I believe, the only player in the league, and that includes Brady, that could go to any team in the league, and you have to instantly consider them a playoff contender. And maybe you could include Brady with that, but if he's not bringing Belichick with him, I'm not including him at 41 years old in that discussion. But I want the audience to know what an unlikely story this is, because we have now just taken for granted over the last decade, Aaron Rodgers, great player, one of the all-time greats. This guy went to Butte Community College. He was a community college prospect out of high school. Now, there are other reasons for that, but it wasn't because he had a bunch of arrests and the situation.
Yeah.
He went to Butte Community College. He then not only falls in the draft, but you could argue goes to, if the day of the draft, where would be the worst place for Aaron Rodgers to go? Oh, I don't know, a place that still has an in-your-prime Hall of Fame legendary quarterback and where he's not going to play for 3 years.
Yeah, he's probably going to retire and unretire about 3 times.
Right, too. We didn't even know that part of it, but it was that. So going into the draft, we're like, oh, he's going to have to play outdoors, cold weather.
Yeah, and a tough place to play.
Wait to play, and then once his career starts, oh, I'm going to be the quarterback going into year 2. No, I'm not. I'm going to be the quarterback going into year 3. No, I'm not. I'm going to be the quarterback going into year 4. And then Favre even that year tried to, no, I'm not him. And the Packers, to their credit, said, no, we're sticking with Aaron Rodgers. And so since then, that unlikely story, I mean, show the audience. Here's what he's done. All he's done is be the most statistically productive quarterback in league history. He's first in rating. He's first in touchdown-interception ratio. He's 10th in touchdowns. But keep in mind, he's only started 10 years.
Right. And so this is not a decade. This is not the last 10 years since Aaron Rodgers.
This is the history of the league. If we can put it back up real quick, this is the history of the league.
All-time rank.
All-time. And where he's tied for 5th in yards per pass, he's tied for 2nd by 1/100th of a yard in the last 58 years, because it's Sid Luckman and Otto Graham up above him.
Okay.
And the gaps, though, he's first touchdown interception ratio. The gap between him and second place is greater than the gap between second place and 9th place. Same with passer rating. The gap between him and second place is greater than the gap between second place and 10th place. He's not only the best statistical quarterback we've ever seen on a per-game basis.
Right.
It is not close. Everyone's fighting for second.
And it's not just that he was going to sit behind a guy who wasn't about to retire anytime soon. He had to fill Brett Favre's shoes. Of all the quarterbacks in the league, if there's a quarterback you don't want to come behind, it's a guy like Brett Favre who is beloved in Green Bay. They loved that guy. And now here comes a new kid from an unknown place, and he's going to say, oh, I'm going to be the guy too. But now you look at what they paid Aaron Rodgers, and you look at the team around him. And, CeCe, I wonder if the Packers have set everything up the way they're supposed to. Have they built the right weapons for Aaron Rodgers to take this team for the next couple years?
Well, the Packers have done a good job either drafting and developing wide receivers. When Aaron took over, you're talking about guys like our friend Greg Jennings, but Greg was an understudy to another guy they developed in Donald Driver. All these guys, too, that I'm going to mention, at one point they were a legitimate number one receiver. So they've never really struggled with wide receivers in Green Bay. Brett Favre had good ones, and Aaron Rodgers had good ones by the organization. Donald Driver into Greg Jennings, into Jordy Nelson, and then the development of Randall Cobb, Devontae Adams being drafted, all these. So they have weapons around them, have some good tight ends that he's played with. But injuries have really hurt him, the lack of a running game. But the criminal part of what they've done with Aaron Rodgers is, well, people say, well, what kind of wide receivers did he have? Because people say, well, Tom Brady doesn't have the type of weapons. But Tom Brady has a defense, and he got the genius that's calling everything. What they've done from a criminal standpoint is on the defense.
So it's the rest of the roster. It is.
Well, I'm just going to concentrate on the defense.
Okay, sure.
All right? On that defense, in 10 years, they were only a top 10 defense 2 times. One of those times, they won a Super Bowl. And, Nick, you're the one that pointed out to me in our discussion that not only have they been bad in the regular season, This defense has been awful in the playoffs. When Aaron Rodgers was at his best, this defense was at its worst. So from a wide receiver standpoint, they've done a good job as an organization, been very, very organic. They've developed talent that they've picked out in the draft. From a defensive standpoint and lack of a running game, that part right there, they are going to regret when Aaron Rodgers is not their quarterback.
They won the Super Bowl in 2010. And starting in 2011, here are the people they drafted with their first draft pick. Every year, that's either that's first-round pick or the very top of the second round if they traded back. A tackle, Derek Sherrod. And then every single year since then, defense. And here are their first-round picks. Nick Perry, Dayton Jones, Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, Demaryius Randall, Kenny Clark, Kevin King, and Jaire Alexander this year. I say that to say this. That's not a list of bad players. But a decade of first-round picks on defensive players, and who's your star? Who's your franchise guy? Who's your guy that you know?
You have one Pro Bowl player, and that's Ha-Ha Clinton Dix.
Exactly right. And so, like, that's where they've done him a disservice. That's why I think it was smart for them to change managerial staffs this offseason. You already saw that paying dividends. Now, next year, they have two first-round picks in Green Bay because of moves they made on draft day. I would argue the Packers have achieved the least you could have achieved in the last decade with Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback. To not only just win one Super Bowl, to only make one Super Bowl, when this guy's been your quarterback and he's been healthy every year except for two, that's an indictment on how, particularly the defense and the running game, the roster's been constructed.
All right, we're going to have much more on this over the next couple hours, but coming up on the other side is Teddy Bridgewater, the future in New Orleans. That's next. Another big story this morning, the Jets trading Teddy Bridgewater and a sixth-round pick to the New Orleans Saints for a third-round pick. The 25-year-old Bridgewater, who now slots in as the backup behind Drew Brees, found out about the deals. The Jets were boarding a bus bound for Philly for tonight's preseason game. Teddy's a Saint, also plays for the Saints now. CC, how good of a fit will New Orleans be for one Teddy Bridgewater?
I couldn't find a better fit as I go up and down the roster. And it's just not because it's not always about just what the opportunity is. Sometimes it's about some of the intel that you might know. I know a lot of the players on New Orleans Saints. I feel like I know Sean Payton very well, and I've gotten a chance to know him through Bill Parcells. Bill Parcells has mentored Sean Payton. That's his guy. Bill Parcells got one guy in the NFL. It's not Bill Belichick. It's Sean Payton. So I appreciate what Sean has done, how he's developed as a coach, and what Sean does with offensive players. Sean does not waste their talent. If you look at all the players that he's gotten, how he's been able to utilize them, how he's been able to take advantage of their skill set, and who he turned Drew Brees into. Because I remember watching Drew Brees in college in Purdue, dinking and dunking. You knew he was a smart quarterback, but you didn't think he was going to be Drew Brees in the NFL. What you really thought Drew Brees was going to be was probably a version of a Doug Flutie. Not necessarily running around, but an undersized guy, very, very competitive, not necessarily the prototype arm strength that you would want. But, man, Drew Brees, after that significant injury, turned himself into a workout warrior, and Sean Payton has been so creative that every year his team is one of the top offensive teams. Running the ball, passing the ball combination. They got a very good offensive line. So this is a great fit for Teddy. I spoke to the Jets 2 days ago. So I could see that the Jets love having Teddy around. And this was going to be a tough decision, even though we know, Nick, that Sam Darnold was going to take over the reins of that organization. But Teddy made it tough on them. Let's look how far Teddy had come. In just a month of preseason, a guy who shattered his knee a couple years ago, wasn't good enough to beat out Case Keenum and Sam Bradford late in the season last year with the Minnesota Vikings, but was so impressive in the OTAs, so impressive in the mini camps, that he would warrant a third-round pick. Like, man, that it was amazing what how they were able to rehab Teddy's image in the football world. To me, that was amazing. They were able to get a third-round pick for him yesterday, Nick.
This is the best situation as far as growing as a quarterback Teddy's ever been in, and it's not even close. Like, I think Zim's an excellent coach, but he's a defensive coach who, and the staff in Minnesota's done a really good job, but they're not Sean Payton.
Right.
And Todd Bowles is a defensive coach, and the staff in New York is, all their quarterback brain power is going to be spent on the blue chip prospect, Sam Darnold. Now, part of me was a little disappointed when I saw he went to a team where he will not be competing for a starting spot. But
we just said that about Aaron Rodgers.
Well,
too.
Sure. But at this point in this season, there wasn't going to be anywhere, really, that he was going to compete for a starting spot. There was the hope, not the hope, but the potential for injury, and that he could be traded and plug and play there. Mm-hmm. You don't look at any team like the Colts were last year, where you go into the year and like, man, they got nobody at quarterback. Maybe they're going to trade for someone and start them. And so for Teddy's development, I like this for him. And if Drew Brees is walking away in a year, then I like this for New Orleans as well as for Teddy. Once upon a time, when C mentioned, New Orleans took an injured quarterback that people had questions about, and he became Drew Brees. If they can, he was around the same age. Teddy's 25. I think Brees is 27.
Yes.
If they can take a quarterback that had been injured, people have questions about, and turn him into something greater than he'd been in Teddy Bridgewater's moving forward, that would be amazing. From the New Orleans side of things, if Brees isn't walking away, I don't totally understand this. I'm happy for Teddy, and I think he's a starting caliber player, but this is a guy you didn't think was good enough 6 months ago or 4 months ago to bring in via free agency for a couple million dollars guaranteed, and now you're giving up a third-round pick when you have no control over him after this season. So in that regards, I don't totally understand it from New Orleans, but I'm happy for Teddy.
Do you think there's some reasoning behind Drew Brees only signing a one-year deal with New Orleans? Because why else would a veteran quarterback like Drew Brees sign? Because
Brees has this year and next year.
Is it an option?
Brees, he signed a two-year, $50 million deal for this past offseason. Remember, he was a quarterback hit true free agency. So he's tied to the Saints for this year and next year. Now, obviously, he can retire. Like, signing the contract doesn't mean you can't retire. And maybe the Saints look at it and say, we saw last year a backup quarterback win a Super Bowl. Like, right now our backup quarterback is either Tom Savage, who's objectively awful, or Taysom Hill, who is on their punt coverage team. Like, they don't have a backup quarterback there, so maybe that's why it seems like a high price to pay for a backup.
So let's assume that he is staying. Let's just talk about where Teddy fits in with the Saints. You wonder whether he could be a franchise quarterback, given what he came back from, even though they brought Brees in, and he did. He's got leadership. He's got poise. He's got confidence. He's got accuracy. He may not have the skill set, or he's not even close right now to where the talent is of a Drew Brees. But doesn't he have all the fundamental qualities of someone that you want to say, hey, this is a guy we can get behind as long as he stays healthy for the foreseeable future?
I think that Sean Payton has convinced the organization that Teddy Bridgewater would take over when Drew Brees. I think that's why they spent the third round. And, Jenna, you are right. He has all the attributes that you want. He's going to be the first guy there. He is a born leader. Like, he went to a school, you talking about a tough school, Miami Northwestern? Teddy Bridgewater quarterbacked that team and was the team captain. And I'm talking about, they got some rough football players. He went to Louisville. Turn that campus, turn that university around. He quarterbacked my Minnesota Vikings. So I know people in the building and in the fondness that they have for Teddy Bridgewater. I just saw him 2 days ago with the Jets. The Jets' teammates, they love him. Yesterday, when he got the news, they were boarding the buses, getting ready to go to Philadelphia. And in communicating with one of the Jets players couldn't be happier for a guy. Because now, Teddy Bridgewater, is he going to take over for Drew Brees? I believe he is. Just like Drew Brees took over with that shoulder injury at 27, that's where Teddy Bridgewater would be. So you get him for a third-round pick. You sign him to a...
If they sign him to an extension, if this is a get him in the building and we are going to have an enormous recruiting edge on the rest of the world, then I totally am on board with it.
Where can Teddy go to get a Michael Thomas, an Alvin Kamara?
Play indoors, play in good weather when he's on the road typically. No,
imagine the rivalries. Him, Matty Ice. Him, Jameis, if Jameis stays in Tampa.
If it's a Paul George situation, bring him here. Even though he's only got 1 year left.
Okay.
We will sell him on the culture.
Yes.
It's a Kawhi Leonard situation.
And we will have, because we will have, when the Saints traded up, people in this past year's draft traded away next year's first round pick to move up, I believe it was to 14. Mm-hmm. Everyone thought, oh, they're drafting Lamar. I was watching the NFL Network coverage. Mayock, who I think is excellent, basically just started giving the Lamar Jackson scouting report. Because
yes.
Everyone knew you would only trade that much away to get the heir apparent to Drew Brees. They take a project defensive end, Marcus Davenport, out of UTSA.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Everyone is shocked. And folks are looking at it and saying, man, you got a near 40-year-old quarterback with no backup. What's the plan? If the plan now is Teddy, and they believe whether Drew Brees stays or leaves, he will stay with us. We will figure out a way to make it work. Then I'm all on board. If he ends up leaving in free agency this offseason, then I think they're going to look back and say, what was the third round pick for?
And you have to believe there was some semblance of a conversation as far as either between them and Brees, knowing what Brees' plans might be or what Teddy Bridgewater's plans after the year might be, at least in some capacity before bringing him in. All right, we got to take a quick break. Coming up, is Sam Darnold now on the verge of greatness? At least one Pro Bowl quarterback thinks that. That's next on First Things First. Baker Mayfield will start the Browns preseason finale tonight in Detroit. Mayfield had two touchdowns in his first preseason game, but none since. CC, what do you want to see from Baker tonight?
Well, you want to see him continue to grow in the offense. I said that in week number two, but I don't mind players having some type of failure. That's what the NFL is about. You learn more in failure than you do in your successes. So if they're going to, I don't know what type of defense they're going to play. I believe they're going to put pressure on him. Get the ball out of your hand. Make good decisions and finish your team with winning drives, field goals, and touchdowns.
Keep in mind, in the most recent preseason game, the Browns' defense was extraordinary, but the offense was bad no matter who was playing quarterback. Baker threw a pick. Baker got beat up. The offense generated three total points in that 5-0 win. So getting back on the right track when, if we believe the Browns, and I do, this is going to be Baker's last game action for quite some time.
Yeah.
So it's important that his, I think,
finish
his
strong.
Last memory is a good one.
Mm-hmm.
All right, RG3 will start the preseason finale tonight for the Ravens. Griffin has looked solid for Baltimore. No turnovers in three games. Chris, should the Ravens hold on to RG3, keep three quarterbacks on the roster?
Absolutely. I mean, what other quarterback, if Lamar happens to get in the game, can duplicate what you're trying to do with Lamar? I mean, we know Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco's going to be the starter there. You can't duplicate his skill level with
right.
Lamar or RG3. You have to protect yourself. Lamar could have gotten hurt two or three times in the
already.
Preseason. Keep RG3 on your roster, Baltimore.
I think, and RG3, by the way, has played well this preseason. Credit
yes.
to him after being out of football for a year. But I thought you made a point almost in passing last week about this that I thought was so smart and I had never considered it, which is even if Lamar's your backup, you're going to spend a lot of time installing a set of plays for him.
Mm-hmm.
And if something happens to him and RG3's not there, then you might as well spend all that time watching movies. Like, it's just wasted practice time for your team. If RG3 is there, they can then use him for those.
And
I think
let's
that's
not
why
forget the
it.
Skill set. RG3 is a better thrower of the football right now
Dan
and
Lamar.
Can fill in for Flacco. If they need a quarterback for 60 plays, Lamar's not ready to play 60 plays in the NFL.
Right, if Flacco
game.
Went down right now, RG3
yes.
probably is the better immediate backup.
All right, it's no secret the Cowboys are weak when it comes to offensive weapons, but how weak? According to USA Today, Dallas has the worst group of wide receivers and tight ends in the entire NFL. CeCe, what can Dallas do offensively to combat their underwhelming group and help out Dak Prescott?
Man, that defense is going to be special. Like, watching them in the preseason, I know our guy Mark Schlereff told us we need to be concerned with their center, Travis Frederick, as far as the syndrome that he has, yes. But I believe that their defense helps out their wide receiving core so we find out, like, who they are. It's not as if they're bad or unproductive. We don't know Allen Hurns. We don't know what he's going to be. As a featured receiver, which he hadn't been in a couple years, who's he going to be? Is Cole Beasley going to be able to grow his game? Will they clamp him down in the slot? What type of productivity will they get from their tight end? Terrence Williams, will he get back to where he was a couple years ago as a legitimate deep threat? And these other guys that they have, Michael Gallup, will he emerge as the young gun there as a draft pick? So their defense, to me, is the thing. If this wide receiving core, if you want to be able to complement them, we know they have a running game. But I believe their defense and their ability to create turnovers. You can play good defense and not let people score points. But also, you can do what some of the other better defenses, not score points, but give your offense extra possessions during the game. I think that's the most reliable thing that they have there in Dallas, Jenna.
Well, and it's so interesting because the last couple of years we've talked about how the offense has to help the defense. Control time of possession. Make sure they're only playing 27, 28, 29 minutes a game rather than the other way. And while that might still be the best path for the defense because they're a little undersized and because they're going to want to get after the quarterback, you'd want them on the field rather than 32 minutes, 28 minutes. I think the point about causing turnovers is key, because what's our biggest concern with any team that doesn't have legitimate receiving weapons? The ability for sustained 70-yard, 75-yard, 80-yard touchdown drives, right? The ability to make, usually on a 75-yard, you get a kickoff, take a knee, start at the 25, you got to go 75 yards. Typically, you need at least one big chunk play. Our concern with Dallas is, even if Zeke's giving you 4.5 yards a carry, you have one play that puts you off schedule and now you're punting. If the defense forces turnovers, it's not just the extra possessions. It's the short fields. It's if you can start a drive at the opponent's 32-yard line, now the Zeke 4 yards a carry thing can work a lot better. You're already in field goal range. Like that is, and that is what I think is important to remember about Dallas, or to not even necessarily remember, but consider. They, in my eyes, made some de facto free agent acquisitions defensively without having to sign anybody. Randy Gregory is essentially a free agent acquisition. A healthy Jalen Smith is like a free agent acquisition. These are guys that were, Gregory was not on the roster last year because he's suspended, and Jalen was at 50% strength. Those guys right there, it's like going out and signing a marquee free agent. So I do think, I think Dallas is going to struggle mightily offensively, but I think Chris is right. I think that front seven defensively could be the key to this.
All right, let's move on now. Now that Teddy Bridgewater is no longer in the Jets quarterback mix after being traded to New Orleans, the team can move forward with their future. And not surprisingly, they reportedly named rookie Sam Darnold as their week one starter. The number three overall pick will be the youngest quarterback to start week one since the merger.
Wow.
Darnold has been receiving a lot of praise this preseason, most recently from former quarterback Tony Romo.
I really think Sam is going to be one of the great quarterbacks in the National Football League. I think he's got a chance before he finishes his career at some point to possibly be, you know, the top guy. Brady's going to be done one day. Uh-huh. I think when he goes away, it's going to be Aaron Rodgers, and he's going to be the guy until he's done. But that next phase, you know, there's a chance. I see certain traits in Sam Darnold that are rare.
Well, he's wrong. Tom Brady's going to be playing football till he's 65 years old. CeCe, what are reasonable expectations for a kid like Sam Darnold as a rookie starter?
If they start him in week number one, if he could start in 13 or 14 games, start and finish those games. I believe those reps and that intel. And that it's not, he don't get sacked 50 times. Now, you got to be able to protect a young guy. If you sack a guy 50 times.
And David Carr.
Yeah, we have seen in NFL history, if you want to change the arc of a young quarterback, let him get hit or sacked a whole bunch. But if he can start and finish those games, because I'm like Tony Romo. I do believe he's going to be a superstar. We have 5 quarterbacks drafted in the first round. Nick and I both believe that 2 of these guys are going to be superstars. And we believe 2 of the 3 are going to be either Josh Rosen, Sam Darnold,
and
Baker Mayfield. Yep. We believe 2 of those guys are going to be superstars. We also believe whoever is not that superstar, not that they're not going to be good, but them and potentially Lamar Jackson will be longtime starters in this league and be good players. All right, so we believe Sam Darnold has that potential. But it's really, really important that the Jets make it easy, that their defense has to be improved. Their offensive line, you got to establish some type of running game. And at the end, Jenna, you know I love my wide receivers. The young wide receivers that they do have, they're old. They only got 1 veteran in the room. That's Jermaine Kearse. I talked to the group 2 days ago. They have Terrell Pryor is coming off of offseason surgery, a disappointing season with the Washington Redskins. But a lot of this relies on one player, and that's Robbie Anderson. Can he produce the type of productivity that he had last year?
Because we saw flashes from him last year.
We saw some great stuff out of him as far as yards per catch, big plays. He did something at the end of the regular season last year. He campaigned into the television for a Pro Bowl. But he had almost 1,000 yards. Not a lot of optics on him. He made enough big plays to be able to keep the Jets. Surprisingly, that's how the Jets surprised people and won
five games. Especially early in the season when they were a team that we were discussing before the year with our guy Pep, who's a Jets fan.
And one promising thing that I did see with the Jets and talking to Todd Bowles, and they're putting a lot of resources into Robbie Anderson and his growth. He had an offseason issue this year that he is clearing up. The Jets are very, very comfortable. The NFL is still investigating and haven't had some type of ruling. But in the team meeting that I was a part of, I saw him sitting next to Josh McCown and Sam Darnold. And he realizes who Sam is. And him and Sam has started this relationship. But for to see him trying to become a student, trying to change what the optics and what people see him to be, because the altercation he was in this offseason, it was disturbing. But he's trying to grow himself. He's trying to grow his reputation. And we're going to give him benefit of the doubt. But if he can produce on the level that he produced last year over the course of 16 games, I think tomorrow we're going to do a segment on breakout players, guys under the radar. Robbie Anderson will be in those players.
So let's talk about him for a moment before I encircle back, because how it applies to Sam Darnold. If people didn't follow the offseason thing, I don't want people to think he was accused of domestic violence incident or something like that.
Yeah.
He had an incident where he was pulled over and allegedly said some really nasty things to a police officer. And so that's why it was jarring. It was because of the language he used. But he wasn't accused of using a weapon on anybody, something like that. But and so the league's looking into it on his end. He's a guy that was an undrafted kid out of Temple who all of a sudden was making some spectacular catches last year with poor quarterback play.
Also, another guy from Temple, the head coach.
The head coach, Todd Bowles.
So he's taking a personal interest in developing Robbie.
Yeah. And so why would we spend this much time talking about this player? Because we know Darnold doesn't have a good offensive line. Right? Just period, point blank. I also have real questions about who their tight end's going to be. I have real questions about, do they have above average running game with Bilal Powell and Isaiah Crowell, I think, are their top two running backs, at least on the latest depth chart. They're going to need someone to make plays, someone that is reliable. Now, from Darnold, what do I expect from Sam Darnold? I think Chris's point of staying healthy is the most important point, but I did not think, and I do not think Darnold has the highest ceiling of the quarterbacks drafted. But I said I would have taken him number one overall. Why? Because I think he is the one least likely to flame out, the one most likely to be, pro-ready. Rosen might be the most pro-ready, but the one who's going to take to the NFL the quickest. And the Jets knew that. And so his expectations are not that different than had he gone number one overall, because the Jets would have taken him number one overall, and he's going to be the only quarterback, maybe Josh Allen, but probably the only quarterback of this draft class to start week one. So even though Baker's the number one pick, he's going to have the mantle on his shoulders. I think I said that wrong, but he's going to have to shoulder that burden for the class as a whole. Like, people are saying, is this the 83 quarterback class? Is this the 04 quarterback class? He's the first one that's going to be out there, and it's in New York City, as you know well. There's going to be a lot of eyeballs on him. What I think he has going for him is this, is what's the last time Jets fans had real hope and optimism about a quarterback? The last time Jets fans, this guy will be good enough, not a 40-year-old Vinny Testaverde, but a young quarterback that they said, this guy is our future. They drafted Christian Hackenberg. He never made it to the field. They drafted Bryce Petty mid-round. He was never going to be a starter. Like, that is where I think he will have a wider berth than other first-round picks.
Do you think, though, that Romo's right as he looks a little deeper into the future, that this kid could turn into a star, a force in this league?
I mean,
he's ready.
He has those type of attributes. I got a lot of respect for Tony Romo in the talent, his ability to be able to evaluate talent, because Tony wasn't a big-time player, but Tony knows the intangibles. The strange things about it is Tony made those comments about, and this is something you picked up on, he made those comments about the guy, the Jets quarterback. But there's a young quarterback in Dallas. Kind of strange he didn't say that about Dak Prescott.
Well, it's Tony's job at this point, and it can be tough Sonny's job at this point to remove himself from the Dallas Cowboys. Like, Cowboys aren't paying him anymore. Yeah. CBS is. And so sometimes that's tough for guys to do as far as remove themselves, and he won't ever be fully
But I
removed.
Thought this was harder for him to do, to reach for a guy. There's five of them. Let me take this guy in New York and say, hey, this guy's going to be special.
Sure.
It's been easy to do today. I believe that's going to be pretty good.
Right. No doubt.
All right, we got a break there. Coming up, could Khalil Mack actually be staying in Oakland after all this mess? That's back here on First Things First, we're now joined by friend of the show, Super Bowl champ, all-around great-dressed man, Chris Kenny. Chris,
thank you for that compliment, Jenna. Yeah. You're trying to make a black man blush early this morning.
You bring it. You always have witty, smart, insightful things
makeup,
to say.
Jay makeup, he's blushing.
Appreciate it.
Of course. That was your best intro of Chris Canty.
Ever.
That's ever happened.
You see sweat that's pouring down the side of my face.
We finally got the office. Only took
Don't
us a
expect
year.
More.
Only took
Don't
us one year.
More.
Yep.
The standoff continues between Khalil Mack and the Raiders. Here's where we stand. The two-time first-team All-Pro Mack wants to cash in like Odell Beckham and Aaron Rodgers. And while trade rumors have been floated out there, Oakland is reportedly not too motivated to make a deal unless the team is willing to part with two first-round picks for Khalil Mack. Chris Canty, will Mack play for the Raiders again, do you think?
It doesn't feel like it, just because there hasn't been a whole lot of conversation between Khalil Mack, his representation, and the organization. The fact that John Gruden has only spoken to him once since he took the head coaching job, and that there hasn't been more attempts to reach out to him, it just feels a little bit awkward. And at this point, I think we might be at an impasse in terms of Mack returning to the Raiders. Now, if you're Khalil Mack, I feel like you've proved that you've done everything that the organization could have asked for you to do, being a top five pick. You've showed that you were one of the most dominant players in the NFL, being able to be an all pro at two positions, outside linebacker and defensive end, a defensive player of the year on your resume. At this point, the organization has seen enough to make a financial commitment to you to give you the type of security that you're looking for. I just don't understand why the Raiders haven't gotten this done yet, or at least had more conversation around it. And the fact that there hasn't been more communication leads me to believe that he's probably played his last down as a Raider.
I'm going to pose the question that Jenna posed to me, to you. Give me the word on the street, man. Who is Khalil Mack? Is there something out there that, like, we should be worried about or something? That the Raiders, that there's some type of reason why they're not signing him? Or is everything that we've read, the player is everything that he's supposed to be?
Well, the player is everything that he's supposed to be. And hearing Rod Woodson talk about him, he was saying, because he was a coach on that Raiders staff, he was saying that Khalil Mack, as great of a player as he is, he's the same caliber of person in the locker room and off the field. So he's represented the organization to the highest
and
degree,
that was the
both
word
on
out of Buffalo. That was the word. Do you know how hard it is to become a top five pick out of the University of Buffalo? Like, I mean, he has had an impeccable background throughout. He has had impeccable production throughout. He is still, to this day, the all-time Division I football leader in tackles for loss. No player has accounted for a greater percentage of his team's sacks over the last 2 years or over the last 3 years than Khalil Mack. And this is, I'm going to put an unfair burden on Khalil Mack on this, because you, it's business, you have a short career, you are only responsible for yourself, but I hope Khalil Mack recognizes that he is now no longer just fighting for himself. He is fighting for every future potential all-pro who's in the fifth-year option as a first-round pick at making the teams do what the entire new CBA was set up to do. Pay established players. The fifth-year option was not supposed to be hostage-taking. Every other pick in the draft is on a four-year contract or less. First-round picks are on four-year contracts with this fifth-year option. That was not supposed to be a penalty for the great players. That was supposed to be a, if it's a Jadeveon Clowney situation, man, we want to keep you. You've been hurt. We've seen good and bad. Let's have one more tryout year. If Mack relents and all of a sudden shows up, if he plays for this contract, then every other player whose team wants to do this to them, that is a superstar going in their fifth-year option, they're going to be able to say, man, you're not better than Khalil Mack. Why would he give you a deal? You're not like so it is a bigger burden than just what it means for him. That might not be fair for him, but that's the reality of the situation. And I look around the league, and two first-round picks is a heavy price to pay. But Khalil Mack's one of just a handful. Mm. You can count on one hand non-quarterbacks in the league that I'd pay it without a second thought. I would pay that without a second thought. The team I root for, the Chiefs, man, do you know how excited I would be about that defense going to be bad? Add Khalil Mack. Let's see what they can do with the offense that I think is going to be very good. Like, Raiders, you don't want him. Your divisional rivals will happily take him for two first-round picks, I would imagine. And so I just, this whole thing, I think Oakland's botched it from the word go.
Oakland has. Do you think, and I think we all agree that Khalil Mack has played this the way he's supposed to, but is there any talk to, or would you consider him maybe having played this incorrectly? Like, maybe he should have done what Odell did, show up to camp, play all his cards, show up, show that he's ready to play, you know, and then go in and sit down and talk to Gruden?
Well, I feel like that's a different situation. Because Odell had some baggage in terms of the video that was released earlier this offseason with him in the hotel room in Paris, the antics that we've seen, post-snap penalties, some of the things that he said and done in the spotlight.
Right, that's not Khalil Mack.
It was a little bit different. Khalil Mack hasn't put himself in that situation. Khalil Mack has done everything that the organization could expect a top-five pick to do.
And the Giants need to see that Odell was healthy. Khalil Mack.
Yeah, he had a couple things.
Let's just say that Odell had a totally clean off the field. Coming the year removed from when you just missed the season with injury, you probably, team typically would want to see you show up and play.
Yeah. If Odell had 90 and 1,200, which would have been under the marks that he had, I would have told Odell, man, don't go over there until they give you your money. You're like, you can't afford it. Every day, we have seen too many players hurt in practice. Now, yesterday, you guys, we talked about the Khalil Mack, and I'm just saying from a football standpoint, I wish he would have signed the one-year tender and gone there and wrecked John Gruden. He hadn't been in NFL football camp, so that he might know what an all-pro defensive end looks like.
Yeah.
But in all reality, that's not the advice that I can give a guy that's produced on the level. I like Nick Wright's point. And listen, man, we need to, you missed your calling. We need a Nick Wright needs to open up an agency. He's representing all first rounders. And of course, he's just going to do this now. He ain't not even going to charge them. Any African-American quarterback, he's going to represent for free. Now, he's going to do that for free.
I knew it. Okay? As soon as he said, and of course, I knew it was coming.
All right, Chris, where do you think Khalil Mack should end up? What team out there could really use his services for two first-round picks? I know Nick mentioned a couple of them.
Well, I know that everybody's pointing to the Green Bay Packers because they have two first-round picks in 2019. And there's the relationship between Reggie McKenzie and the Green Bay Packers front office. But I said from the beginning, once the Mack trade rumor started to surface, that the Jets should be considered the leaders in the clubhouse because Mike Maccagnan and that organization, they've addressed a lot of needs on the defensive side of the ball, invested a lot of draft capital on that side of the ball, and that's the one missing piece, an edge pass rusher. And so when you look at where the Jets are, starting with a young rookie quarterback on a controllable salary for the next 5 to 6 seasons, it makes sense with $90 million in cap space that you would go after a guy like Khalil Mack. And keep in mind, they got the third-round pick from the New Orleans Saints, so they're going to be able to add that because they lost the two in the move.
They lost two second-rounders.
In the move, they lost the two from 2019 to move up to get Sam Darnold. So I think that the Jets would be considered one of the favorites to land Khalil Mack if indeed the Raiders would consider trading.
Here's why the Jets also, if all of a sudden more, if multiple teams get involved, why the Jets would be in the pole position. All first-round picks are not created equal. If New England calls, they wouldn't. But if New England calls and offers you two first-round picks, okay, so you're offering us the 30th and the 31st, or the 31st and 32nd.
Right.
The Jets, at least one of those is likely a top 10 pick, even with Khalil Mack. Maybe you're a little more optimistic, but you understand what I mean.
Yes.
But, Jenna, to answer your question, where does Khalil Mack fit? He fits in Cleveland, he fits in Kansas City, he fits in Oakland, he fits in New England, he fits in Green Bay. Great players fit everywhere. He's a great player.
All right, we'll see. Meanwhile, continues. Chris, stick around. Coming up, is Teddy Bridgewater the future in New Orleans? That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, Super Bowl champ Chris Canty is with us. The Teddy Bridgewater experiment in New York has come to an end. That after the team traded him to the Saints for a third-round pick. The 25-year-old signal caller who will now back up Drew Brees found out about the deals. The Jets were boarding a bus bound for Philly for tonight's preseason game. All right, Kenny, how good of a fit are the Saints for Teddy Bridgewater?
I think the Saints are a great fit. Knowing what Sean Payton likes to do on the offensive side of the ball, you need an accurate quarterback. And Teddy Bridgewater, if nothing else, has proven to be an accurate quarterback that's not going to turn the football over. So I think he fits schematically what Sean Payton and that Saints offense want to do. And then looking at it big picture, the Saints are going to be in the market for a successor to Drew Brees, because Drew has got one or maybe two seasons left in him before he's going to walk away. And not having a first-round pick in the 2019 draft, the Saints had to be creative about how they're going to go about finding somebody that could be a viable starting quarterback for him post-Drew Brees. And I think Teddy Bridgewater is capable of doing that. He's answered the question about whether his knee would be able to hold up, being able to go through the entire offseason, OTAs, minicamp, training camp, no issues with that, three preseason games. So I think Teddy Bridgewater moving forward for the Saints is viewed as somebody that's a potential successor for Drew Brees.
And one thing people should realize with Teddy, like, which knee did he shatter? Well, what difference does it make? Well, the quarterback, it makes a big difference. If a quarterback shatters one of his knees, and if he's a right-handed quarterback, I'd much rather it be his left knee, which Teddy was. So because it takes less mentally. And the reason why is because his plant foot is going to be his back foot. And 99% of the throws he's going to be making, he's going to be planting that right foot and driving off of it. And I just haven't seen quarterbacks that have injured that knee able to perform on a high level for a longer period of time. The front leg, once you get used to the bodies and stuff being around you, it's more of your guide and steer leg. And as we can see from here, Teddy in that big knee brace is on his lead leg. When Tom Brady got hurt in the pocket, what, his front leg got rolled up. Now, would his career be different if it was his other knee? I don't know that. But I'd much prefer it be the lead. Okay. And what you see with Teddy in the limited action in Minnesota, you saw him not necessarily comfortable around the pocket. Now, in the Jets, in training camp, and in the preseason, you've seen Teddy. There's two things I've noticed. He's more comfortable with the rush being around him. You saw that when he had to escape the pocket and the guy was right in front of him, he was fine with that. He got flushed out of his pocket, got rushed to his left. You saw him push off to his right, was comfortable. But his football has a little more zip on it than the Teddy I saw in Minnesota. So it's nice to see that. Quarterbacks in this league, we have seen Canty in their 20s. We have seen them generate more arm speed. We have seen their arms get stronger as they approach 30. So Teddy does have that for them. But the potential to play in a Sean Payton offense in a controlled climate, 9 games, because let's not forget they're in the division with Atlanta. Yeah. So they're going to play there. So they got eight there in the
Super Bowl. And warm weather cities, Charlotte and Tampa, they're not cold in the wintertime.
Yeah, right. So it's very, very friendly to Teddy. I can't think, and I looked up and down, I couldn't think of a better quarterback city division that Teddy Bridgewater could be in this short period of time. Because Teddy, let's not forget 6 months ago, he was an unrestricted free agent. He was out there on the market for every team to have.
And that's where my question on the Saints side of this comes. Because if we talk about the Packers and underachieving with Aaron Rodgers quite a bit, at least the Packers have been in contention seemingly every year. Since the Saints won their Super Bowl, they haven't even been to an NFC title game. They've only won 3 playoff games since they won that Super Bowl in 2009. Brees has been Brees every single year. And so I think that team and Mickey Loomis has been, to a large degree, mismanaged when you have that quarterback and that coach paired for this last decade and minimal success. And so you can look at this one of two ways. This is a way to turn the page. We got our next quarterback, our heir apparent, for just a third-round pick. We now have made up for the fact we can't draft one next year because, as you mentioned very importantly, they traded away next year's first round to go move up and draft Marcus Davenport. The other way to look at it is this. You could have gotten this guy for no draft pick compensation for very little bit of money this offseason if you had this foresight. And if Brees says, I'm coming back next year, you can't franchise Teddy because Brees got $30 million against the cap next year and franchise is $20 million. Then Teddy's just an unrestricted free agent and you could lose him for nothing. So I can't judge this move from the Saints side of things until I see if Teddy is going to stay and right. if they are able to use this year as a recruitment tool.
If they're able to extend Teddy during the season.
Then it's a home run. Then I believe it's a home run.
But see, that's why I think they went ahead and made the move. Once they saw that Teddy Bridgewater was healthy, now you have the first opportunity to be able to try to lure him in, try to host him and make sure that he feels good about where he's at so you can try to get Teddy Bridgewater rather than having to compete with the other teams on the open marketplace in March.
So if you guys are talking about that there could be a week six story, Teddy Bridgewater and the Saints agree to a contract extension, then there's the best, in my eyes, one of the best third round picks they could have ever spent. Like, if that happens, then even though they could have signed in this offseason, I think it's a very good move by the New Orleans.
And just taking a little peek out to the 2019 NFL draft, like the Saints, if they're looking where they'll be picking, they don't have a first, okay? Mm-hmm. Now they don't have a third. But if you look at the quarterback prospects, where the Saints would have been drafting, would they have gotten a better player, younger player, at that third than they would have gotten with Teddy? They're going to be drafting between 60 to 90th, right?
Whole third round, my guess is the Saints are going to be real good. So that third round pick probably be somewhere from 85 to 96.
Yeah. Right, and I think that's a good gamble in getting Teddy compared to getting one of these unproven prospects coming out of this year's draft.
Chris, we talk about where Bridgewater fits into this Saints team. His playing style, his approach. Can you draw any parallels between the way he plays and the way Drew Brees plays at all, fitting into that system?
Well, I think both of those quarterbacks have a good idea of where they want to throw the football in terms of just having spatial awareness and being able to fit the football in there and understanding their limitations. Both of those guys would not be considered quarterbacks that have strong arms right now at this point. Drew Brees has kind of declined in that regard. But I think both quarterbacks understand who they are and they understand where they need to go with the football and the timing of it within Sean Payton's offense. They want to get the ball out quickly and make sure that they get it to the skill position guys that can make a difference. And listening to Sean Payton talk yesterday, he wanted to develop a program that's sustainable. That was the big thing that came out in his interview yesterday morning. I think this is a part of that, being able to get the successor for Drew Brees right now.
And whomever the successor for Drew Brees is, let's assume it's Teddy Bridgewater, he will be walking into an offense that has better weapons than Drew Brees walked into. Like, with no disrespect to Deuce McAllister and Joe Horn, we're talking Alvin Kamara, Mark Ingram, and Michael Thomas. Yeah. Like,
on great contracts.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so that is like that. Now, Michael Thomas pretty soon is going to be on an Odell-type
contract.
Yeah,
but he's in the third year. He's the first-round pick.
Absolutely right. Yeah. And so they have...
He's going to be the first $20 million receiver.
Michael Thomas?
Yes, sir.
Oh, wow.
You heard it.
But he's that type of player. And so that's the point. Like, whomever takes over for Drew Brees, the pantry or the cupboard is much more stacked than it was when Drew got there over a decade ago.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, well, Chris, we'll see you a little bit later on in the show. Does Aaron Rodgers have anything left to prove after his record-setting deal? This is First Things First. College football is back. Labor Day weekend on FS1. Catch three great matchups, CC, including Heisman hopeful Bryce Love and Stanford hosting San Diego State. Also, Texas looking to avenge last year's upset against Maryland. 3 days of football starting tonight on FS1, or stream all the action live on the Fox Sports app.
In honor of Texas coach Tom Herman, I'm going to be in Miami while that game's taking place. Maybe not at the same establishment.
I'm going to try to get you an address.
Was in Miami.
Hey, what's down there?
Back in those Ohio State days. See, what are y'all doing?
They were coming by St. Thomas. I went home, though.
Okay.
All right, we're going to talk Aaron Rodgers. Big deal in a second. But first, this is again Michigan High School football. Nice pats and catch by Trevor Central duo Trey Searles and Tobin Schwanecki.
What is this high school, Jenna?
Yes,
this is in Michigan.
I didn't know that they play football in Michigan. Definitely in high school.
Must
football.
Be the Upper Peninsula.
Oh, yeah, because they're kids that go to Michigan State and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Oh,
forgot about that. Right. Moving on to Frisco.
Good catch.
Texas now, see. Great one-handed snag by Reedy High School running back Mike Ferrara.
No, this is a great catch, especially by a running back, because he's told this ball is behind his head. This is blind. This is almost in the same spot Odell Beckham made his catch. Yep. That ball was behind his head.
And he doesn't even fall down after. He just, watch this, after he makes the catch, just keeps a little back pedal going.
Finally, Illinois commit Marquez Beeson from Duncanville, Texas.
Come on, Marquez.
Making the
defenders
slip.
Get the ball in your right hand. Oh, put the ball on the outside. Avoid the defenders.
I stayed in.
Oh, okay, there you go. He's got a good coach.
What I believe to be the single worst hotel in America in Duncanville, Texas, one weekend for an AAU basketball tournament for my son. See, the keys for this hotel, they were actual keys, bro. Like a lock and key. No key cards.
That's retro. They're doing that
oh,
now.
My goodness. The bugs weren't retro.
Yeah, he's trying to get out of this.
Duncanville is rough.
He's trying to make some money then.
Our top story this morning.
Keep working your thing.
Oh, my God.
Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers became the highest paid player in NFL history yesterday. The Packers signed their two-time MVP to a four-year, $134 million extension that, when all is said and done, could be worth $180 million in total money. Rodgers has said many times he wanted to end his career as a Packer. Now it looks like he will. CC, what does Aaron Rodgers have left to prove at this point?
Oh, I mean, he's playing in the era with the greatest quarterback ever, Tom Brady. Oh, he's got a lot to prove. I mean, I like some of the things inside the contract because they to me, they send a message of, like, what's important.
Tell me.
Aaron Rodgers has tremendous amount of value on his off-season workouts. Now, I can understand if they were in L.A., if they were in Dallas, they were in some other places, warm climate. But Aaron Rodgers committed to this organization. He's committed to being in Green Bay. He's got a couple $1 million just to report there in the offseason. Now, everyone would be like, well, what incentive is that? He's got a big bonus. I would do that, too. No, it tells me he could be anywhere. He wants to be there to help develop whoever's going to be there, and he's going to be the face of the franchise. If a guy comes in there as a free agent, where's Aaron Rodgers? Go down to the locker room. You can find him. So for me, I believe that Aaron Rodgers wants to play for one team. He doesn't ever want to go anywhere, and he does not want to be like Brett Favre. Brett Favre won one Super Bowl. If Aaron Rodgers left Green Bay Packers with one Super Bowl win, I don't think that he would consider that to be successful. So he wants to play at a higher level. Can he sustain? He has played in months like football we've never seen. And his numbers, I didn't even know how good his numbers are. I think he's the best quarterback to throw the football that we've ever seen. But Nick has some numbers to be like, I didn't believe it.
Like, there's a lot of ways to do it. We could go from 2011, the year after they won the Super Bowl, up until the year before last, so six full seasons before he got hurt. His average season, 38 touchdowns, seven picks. That's what he averaged. That's, what is that, a 5.5-to-1 touchdown interception ratio, 4,400 yards and a 107 rating. But, okay, I don't want to do just a six-year sample. Let's just show his whole career. How many things he ranks first in NFL history, because he ranks first in passer rating, he ranks first in touchdown interception ratio, he ranks, so this is him next to Peyton Manning. We'll do that now. I was going to do that next. We'll do that now. Because Manning's the other guy that people would say, okay, like, a great regular season, not as great postseason. All right, well, he's got him crushed in the regular season. Crushed. Look at the touchdown interception ratio, Rodgers to Manning. 4.0 to 2.1. And Peyton got to play indoors with Reggie Wayne and Marvin Harrison. Passer rating crushed. Playoff passer rating at the bottom. Crushed. Like, and that's a guy who we would say statistically the greatest quarterback ever. And the NFL history ones that I was alluding to earlier. He is number one all-time passer rating and touchdown interception ratio. And the gap between him and two is greater than the gap between two and 10 in those categories. So all he's got to do to me is win one more. He does have to win one more because, as you mentioned, Big Ben's got two. Eli's got two. Mm-hmm. He's not obviously not going to catch Brady's five. But there's enough guys that have
that
multiple.
Does make a difference.
Peyton's got two. Even though Peyton kind of piggybacked his way to that second one,
right.
He's got two. Peyton went to four. He's only been to one. So, like, at that position, he does need another one. But as soon as he gets another one, if someone wants to go on television and say, he's the best quarterback ever. I know Brady's got all the records. He's the best ever. I wouldn't argue with him.
But first, he has to win that second one. If you look at the team he has now and where they're set up this year, maybe next year, he's got a couple years left now. Are they primed to do that? Do they have the weapons in place to go out and win a Super Bowl at this point?
Well, the thing I can say about Green Bay and the organization, because the organization has gotten criticism that they haven't participated a lot in free agency. If you look at the players, Charles Woodson,
yes,
a number of years ago, which also led them to a Super Bowl. They participate in free agency. Julius Peppers brought him from Carolina. He gave them a big boost. But besides those things, they haven't really had those impact-type players. And it's been to their detriment. Other teams have gone out, participated, improved their rosters, and Green Bay has decided that's not the way that we want to do things.
Which is bizarre because even before he got there, when they participated in free agency, they went and got Reggie White.
The first free agency, Reggie White changed.
He changed the game. The Packers got the player that changed NFL free agency forever in Reggie White.
Yes.
They won a Super Bowl in large part thanks to Reggie White. They got to another one. Now, Favre obviously was amazing. I get that. But Reggie White was still a superstar. And for some reason, they've been like, nah, we're good. They bought a lottery ticket once. They hit it. Two decades later, they bought another one in Charles Woodson. They hit it again. Like, nah, I don't need to buy anymore.
Why? Defensively, the players that they've drafted, because most of their draft are concentrated on, even though they've been on the compliment, they've had good receivers. Donald Driver, our friend Greg Jennings, Cobb, they developed Cobb. Jordy Nelson developed him, and now they have Davante Adams. But the defensive players, outside of Ha-Ha Dixon, like, they just have not hit on drafting these players. And the defense has not supported the team. If you look in 10 years, Aaron Rodgers has not had a defense but two times that was in the top 10. So if they don't get back to a Super Bowl, the defensive players that they drafted, Nick, and how they perform, that will be a major indictment on them.
And, Nick, I think a lot of people are wondering, does this contract that Aaron Rodgers just signed now hamstring them for the foreseeable future in bringing other people in?
I mean, listen, some people could say, why wouldn't he do what Brady did? Like, he could take 30% of his market value like Brady does. Well, Rodgers, as is the case for every other player in the league except for Brady, is not married to a 100-millionaire supermodel to where his money is their side money. Like, that's a nice benefit when you're an NFL quarterback and your money is your family's play money. So take Brady out of it. No, I mean, he just took the Matt Ryan deal and added a percentage to it. Like,
yes.
So he could have gotten more.
No question. If he'd have dug his heels in, I know this isn't the scenario they're in, but if he was a true free agent, I think 5 years, $200 million with $100 million guaranteed would have been offered to him by multiple times.
Yesterday we had the question, Jerry Jones said he would pay
an
absurd amount of money. Now, what would he pay for Aaron Rodgers? Because that would be his down payment on trying to get one of those trophy. So on the free agent market, you are right, Aaron.
And we don't usually do this. We do this with basketball players, not with football players, where we say, put them on a team, are they a contender? Forever with LeBron, it was put them on the Nets, how good are they? Mm-hmm. Put them on the Kings, how good are they? I mean, put Aaron Rodgers right now on the Chicago Bears. Are they a playoff contender? The answer is yes.
Yes.
He is, I think, the only player in the league you can say that about. Pick your team. Who do you think is the worst team in the league, sir? Oh, you think it's Buffalo. You think it's hard to play in Buffalo. You think it's cold and windy. Okay, we'll meet Green Bay. Go put him on Buffalo and see what that team works with, what that team looks like. By the way, if he went to Buffalo, what he'd have there is the best running back he's ever played with in Shady McCoy. He's doing all this whole time with Fat Eddie Lacy and other guys.
Yeah, a wide receiver turned running back.
Right, guy wearing number 88 at running back. I can't speak highly enough about this player.
Clearly.
I cannot. He is one of the best things about watching sports, is a guy that singularly talented doing things we've never seen.
I think one of the most impressive things that you've shown me, and it really stuck out, is comparing him to Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning is considered the greatest regular season quarterback ever. He played in a controlled environment. Aaron Rodgers plays in the worst situation in Green Bay. And that you can't get a more drastic comparison and look at the numbers.
Yeah. Exactly. All right, coming up, got to take a break. Tom Brady, is he still getting better? His coach thinks so. That's next. First. Time for stories to start your morning.
That's not by the rim, Joe.
Baker, and that's why I was not even in the gym. Yeah. Baker Mayfield will start the Browns preseason finale tonight in Detroit. Mayfield had two touchdowns in his first preseason game, but none since. CC, what do you want to see from Baker tonight?
Well, one thing, too, I want the Browns to kind of get used to being on TV. For them, that's something new. When you show highlights of your franchise quarterback and he's supposed to be trying to hit the goalpost, at least have him hit the goalpost, because the first highlight there, he's missing the goalpost. I just want to continue him to build. Don't make mistakes. He's going to get some blitz looks. He's going to get some things, because in every game they get a few looks that they haven't seen. Respond better than he did in week number 3, which was his worst preseason game.
Absolutely, and I would expect a week 4 of the preseason to be the last time we see Baker Mayfield in a game for quite some time. So I think it's important that he plays well. He got beat up in the 3rd preseason game. The Browns offense produced 3 total points in their 5-0 win against Philly. So I think it's important for Baker to have some positive images going into what will be his longest time without playing football in quite some time.
Yeah, I like
as
that.
Tyrod Taylor takes over.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The Browns star. RG3 will start the preseason finale tonight for the Baltimore Ravens. Griffin has looked solid for Baltimore with no turnovers in 3 games. CC, should the Ravens keep 3 quarterbacks on their roster?
Yes, they should, because of who the 3 are and because of their skill level. I believe right now, week number 1, if Joe Flacco was to be injured, their best answer, if they had to go an extended period of time.
RG3
is a lot better. We have to give him credit. He has gone there. He's learned another new system after being out of football, and he's been very impressive. Lamar, he might be your future, but RG3, to me, is the closest thing to duplicating Lamar's skill set.
Well, that's why it's also important, because it's not just that if Flacco were to get hurt early, RG3 is more ready. It's if Lamar were to get hurt in his role as the 15 play a game guy we're talking about. If let's say Tom Savage were your backup, or your 3rd string, pardon me, and Lamar goes down, then all the work you've done, as you illustrated great
all
last
that
week,
practice time,
it's useless.
Yeah.
It's just you could have been doing anything else. Now they have an insurance plan for those packages. So I think for all those reasons,
it worked out.
And RG3, credit to him. He's been a guy,
yes,
not only has he played well a year out of football, but he's had the right mindset, which was not always the case with him.
All right, according to USA Today, the Cowboys have the worst group of wide receivers and tight ends in the entire NFL. Congratulations. Chris, what can Dallas do offensively to combat their underwhelming group and also to help out Dak Prescott?
Man, this is going to be... I don't like making lists and everything, but I try to pick a team that I said, you know something, I would prefer those guys. They're right at the bottom. Like, they're going to have to get an identity crisis. Will Terrence Williams be the guy a couple years ago, legitimate deep threat? Will they have a tight end step up? Because right now, we don't know. Tavon Austin needs a defined role coming out of the backfield or as a wide receiver. And Allen Hurns, I'm dependent on him to be their number one wide receiver. Identity, so the quarterback knows which guy I can go to in certain situations.
You know what I think is more likely? Not that it's likely, but more likely than what you just described happening? Zeke goes for 2,000. That'll fix a lot of things.
Oh, yeah.
How about Zeke become, ooh, I think he'd be the 6th in NFL history, go get 2,000 yards. Like, that to me.
I've never heard you say that
is
one.
I'm not saying it's more than 50-50, but I think it's a better chance that that happens than all of a sudden Allen Hurns gets 1,400.
Jenna, that's the perfect deodorant when your wide receivers stink.
Yeah. 2,000 yards from Zeke.
All right, and we end on the Aaron Donald holdout. In the past few days, the Rams GM, COO, and head coach have all indicated that both sides are close to a new deal. The new contract is expected to make Donald the league's highest paid defensive player. CC, with all signs pointing to this getting done, how realistic are the Rams championship aspirations now this season?
The Rams are going to get this deal done. It's nice that you hear that all levels, you talk about the general manager, the CEO, also the head coach has mentioned it, that it's close to getting done. They have the talent. And Nick and I, we've been looking at teams, and we like to look at different levels, like on the defensive front, their offensive front, because we saw last year in Philadelphia how those things become very, very important. Aaron Donald is one piece to the puzzle. He's a spectacular player. What about their linebacking core? They got a lot of resources in invested in the defensive line. Last year, they were not very good against the run. Now, you bring Ndamukong Suh in, there's not been a team he's been on where you can run anywhere that you wanted to. So that should be better. Their linebacking core is very, very suspect. the overall chemistry, the roles of their cornerbacks. Are they going to be vocal? Are they going to be a man-to-man team? They're going to blitz teams. Offensively, we think, I believe that their quarterback is a better player than people give them credit. But duplicating the amount of points that they scored last year, because that would really help out that defense.
Yeah, I mean, they were the number one offense in football last year.
Yes, they can score a lot of points. That's going to be able to help out the defense. But the linebacking core and the overall roles, are they going to be a lockdown defense on the outside with Wade Phillips' defense, which I believe that that's what they should be?
Yeah.
These are things that we're going to have to see in year number two with Sean McVay.
I thought they were a Super Bowl contender last year. And they ended up losing their first playoff game to the Atlanta Falcons. Like, I understand that they didn't look great in that game. I think they are a Super Bowl contender this year. And I will admit my biases here. I might be a little biased for the Rams because they put this team together this offseason the way I would if I were running a team. Okay, I've got this small window where I'm paying my quarterback nothing. So, you know what? You want my first-round pick for this stud wide receiver? You can have it, and I'll pay him. Todd Gurley, you're the best player on my offense. I want to keep you here long-term. Ndamukong Suh, you might not be the greatest dude in the world, but, man, we had trouble against the run. I will buy you over.
And you like Wade. You like Wade to be able to manage these guys.
Man, someone has to.
I absolutely like Wade. I think there is, even if you are a prickly guy, even if you have some personality issues, it's hard to be mean to an old person. And it's hard to be mean to a...
No offense, Wade.
No, Wade, I can say this. Wade, not
oh, yeah, yeah, Wade likes that.
Like, he is... I mean, it's hard to be disrespectful to an old legend. Like, yeah. And so, like, you might get, like... I would be a little nervous about Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib if the only voice in the room was 32-year-old Sean McVay.
Hey, Coach, how long you been coaching the league? Longer you been alive.
Much is longer than you've been alive. Like, Wade has a son coaching that's yes. older than Marcus Peters, like coaching in the NFL. So I think he's a key part of it. And I think, listen, I think Peters is a great player. Not a good player. I think he's a great player. I think Aqib Talib is still, even at advanced age, a very good player. Mm-hmm. Linebacking core is the only spot I have a question about.
How many more years does Goff have where he doesn't have to get his, this is his last
so
year?
This is his third year. No, my guess is they would have him for two more years very cheaply, and then it would be his fifth year option. Now,
so you're looking at a 2-year window right now
before
with this group
pay
of players
him.
Before
mm-hmm.
you have to pay him.
And maybe less than that, because Sue can leave.
Yeah, after
like some of these yes. guys are rentals. Like the Cooks, they got long term. Gurley, they got long term. Listen, I like the Rams a ton. To me, if Jared Goff can duplicate what he did last year, that's my biggest concern. If he can duplicate what he did last year, this team absolutely can be the best team in the NFC.
All right, let's move on to the Patriots now. Tom Brady, you know that guy? He's 41. He has 5 Super Bowls, 4 Super Bowl MVPs, 3 regular season MVPs, and he's been selected to 13 Pro Bowls. Other than that, the guy's, like, ridiculously average. Also, he's gorgeous. So how is he so consistently great year in and year out? He never stops working. And watching Brady this preseason, Patriots offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels said that he's seen a tremendous desire to improve at the little things, the small things in practice, and then, of course, in the film room as well. CC, is Brady's drive the most impressive quality about him?
I mean, there's a lot of things. And I can tell you, late in my career, man, I got absolutely bored in the meetings. I got bored. I told my wide receiver coach one day, I got mad at him, and I got a little indignant, which
shocked.
I can do.
That's shocking.
I was like, what are you going to teach me today? There's not a route that's been run I haven't run thousands of times. What are you going to teach me today? He said, I'm going to teach you how to do it at an age that you've never done it at. I was like, oh, okay, let me shut up and let me get back. Let me get back to work. And to see Tom, and I'm forever amazed because this is a tough business. And this business is not meant to be able to grow old doing it. The average NFL career for 30 years has been 3.4 years. And this guy with 13 Pro Bowlers, with everyone telling him that, oh, no, you can't do it, and he's got the ultimate motivator in that head coach because he'll get rid of anyone. He's looking for a little bit of a decrease in what you're doing on the field, and he is going to move. That's why he had Jimmy Garoppolo there. Mm-hmm. That's why he had those other guys. Tom felt that pressure. So living and thriving in that environment, I'm impressed with him, how he has made it interesting for him, things that aren't interesting. Because I know, I sat in them chairs. It's boring. These kids are 22, 23 years old. The things they're talking about, they're really irrelevant in Tom Brady's world. And I've seen other veteran players. That's the thing that in the end, the meetings, practicing at a high level, those are things that they just couldn't keep their interest high enough to keep doing.
How much is Tom Brady doing it for himself, and how much is he doing it to set an example for everyone else in that locker room?
I think that everything starts with Tom.
I think it's
a mandate from the organization, and Tom is a great leader, but I think this has, when Tom told Robert Kraft as a sixth rounder, this is going to be your best draft pick ever, that ain't about no, there wasn't no Patriot way then. Tom Brady helped create the Patriot way. It was inside of him.
That's the, so the 3.4 years thing's funny because this is, Brady's had 17 full years as a starter. 17, that means he's had five. 17 divided by five is exactly 3.4. He's had five times the average NFL career. But I know, so LeBron's new show, The Shop, LeBron and Mav Carter, came out a couple nights ago, and people are seizing on a bunch of different things from the show, none of which was what I found most interesting. What I found most interesting was Jon Stewart asked LeBron about why he still does it. Like, why, when he has all these opportunities, why he still wants to get up in the morning and work out, why he still has this drive. And LeBron said, you know, it's a great question. And the drive isn't here anymore. It's here. He's like, I now understand how to work so much better. I understand how to work so much smarter.
Efficiently.
And I enjoy that part of it so much differently, as opposed to, he's like, 10 years ago, he's like, it was all here. Now it's all in my brain. Like, it was like I had a natural instinct.
Are you pointing to your heart? Because it looks like you're pointing
to your gut. That's what he was saying.
No, not my heart.
He said it was all coming from my belly. Like, I was the fire. Now it's all coming from my brain. And that has always been Tom Brady's 4-2-40. His 4-2-40 has been his brain and his drive. And it's why, in my opinion, the offensive coaches that have left Brady, one of the big reasons they have failed is because – if you coached Calvin Johnson, you're a wide receivers coach, you coach Calvin Johnson, and then you go coach a different receiver, you know objectively, well, I can't ask him to be Calvin Johnson. He's not as big, he's not as strong, he can't jump as high, he's not as fast. But when you coach Brady, and then you coach Matt Castle, you're like, well, they got a lot of the same measurables, they got the same draft profile. Like, why can't I ask him to do the things Tom Brady does? Or why can't I ask Brian Hoyer to do the same things Brady does? It's what Weiss ran into. It's what Bill O'Brien ran into. It's what I think Josh McDaniels ran into. Guys, well, I can just ask them to do what Brady does.
Great.
Because they don't realize his being 6'5", running a 4.3 is all here. And that's what has made him I talked about Rodgers being a remarkable story. This is all make-believe. Brady was not a great recruit. He was not a great college player. He was not initially a great
bench
pro
player. Benched
his
senior year.
And like, he looked like a guy who didn't even like working out. And to have this type of longevity in the hardest work environment in the NFL, it's got to be the drive.
And it's such a good point and such a great observation. And tell me if I'm wrong. Sometimes getting this wrapped around it is a hell of a lot harder than muscling your way through a workout. You can get the physical stuff through it. But to wrap your head around the fact that every single little detail is going to add up to something bigger, a lot of guys just say it's just too much.
Yeah, Tom Brady is made of special stuff. And there's only a few players like him. And once we see it, we need to be able to give them credit. Yeah. Now, we like to make excuses that he's with Belichick, but I'm just believing, man, because even when they drafted Tom Brady, Bill Belichick was not who he is today. Robert Kraft would not be the owner he is today without Brady. So for me, when you talk about the New England way, how they do things, the most important thing had to be drafting Tom Brady. It was more important than Kraft even drafting the team and the overall environment. That's what makes all this go. Tom Brady made Kraft a special owner, and he turned Belichick in from a bust to potentially having his bust in Canton and being the greatest coach that's ever coached in the NFL.
Really good stuff. All right, take a break. Coming up, find out who thinks Sam Darnold is going to be a great quarterback. That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First with Super Bowl champ Chris Canty. So where do things stand with the Jets now that Teddy Bridgewater was traded to New Orleans? It looks as if the Sam Darnold era begins week one. The Jets reportedly named him as their week one starter. The number three overall pick will be the youngest quarterback to start the season since the merger. Darnold has been receiving a lot of praise this preseason, most recently from a former quarterback, Tony Romo.
I really think Sam is going to be one of the great quarterbacks in the National Football League. I think he's got a chance before he finishes his career at some point to possibly be, you know, the top guy. Brady's going to be done one day. Uh-huh. I think when he goes away, it's going to be Aaron Rodgers, and he's going to be the guy until he's done. But that next phase, you know, there's a chance. I see certain traits in Sam Darnold that are rare.
All right, Chris Canty, yes, he is the youngest quarterback to start. But of all the guys that came out of this draft class, he's probably the one guy you'd say this guy could start realistically week one. What are expectations for him as a rookie starter?
Well, I think Sam Darnold is going to be a better quarterback in November and December than he's going to be in September and October. And I know that sounds simple enough, but when you look at Sam Darnold, he's not a quarterback that's capable of making everybody around him better right now. But when he gains that experience, I think he'll continue to improve in that way. It's not like he's not the most talented quarterback on this roster. Even before they traded Teddy Bridgewater, Sam Darnold was the best quarterback on this team. The only question was, because he hadn't seen a lot of NFL football, did he have answers to what you're going to see from defenses and defensive coordinators in the first couple of months of the season? Now, in talking with Mike Maccagnan and some people around the Jets during the offseason and during training camp, the one thing that they said that they love about Sam Darnold is the fact that he doesn't make the same mistake twice. So from that, you're taking that position of, okay, this is a quarterback, when he gets the experience, is going to continue to progress. And so for me, it's about letting him get the requisite experience so he can develop into that quarterback that they believe can be a difference maker. That's why they moved up to take him in the top five.
I think if we want to look at a numbers comparison or a player comparison, let's talk about Jameis Winston's rookie year. Jameis Winston started from day one. Jameis Winston was a guy who had high-level success in college, but also his last year at Florida State, an issue with turnovers. That was the issue with Darnold last year. It wasn't just the picks. It was the fumbles, where he averaged more than one turnover a game, nearly 1.5 turnovers a game. Jameis's rookie season, he had an 84 rating, 22 touchdowns, 15 picks. That's only a good year for if you're a rookie, but you felt really good about Jameis. And by the way, he got better each year thereafter. Now, obviously, Jameis's issues are off the field and they are significant. I would also go to Carson Wentz. Now, Wentz didn't have much of a profile coming out of North Dakota State. We didn't know what to expect from him. He started early on, 16 touchdowns, 14 picks, and a rating of nearly 80. What Darnold, statistically, you want to avoid is what Mitch Trubisky did last year, where he played a lot and you were really concerned. What Blake Bortles did his rookie year, played a lot and you were really concerned. Jared Goff's in that bucket as well, but yeah. I almost feel like, man, I just put that. Goff only started half the year. Everyone seems to have gotten better once Jeff Fisher left, whether that's Nick Foles, Todd Gurley, Jared Goff. And he didn't start the entirety of the season. So I think those, like, avoid Trubisky, Bortles, have a profile similar to Winston or to Wentz, and I think you're on the right track.
For me, the expectations have to be in his overall durability, because I do believe it's a very successful season. If that kid, he starts week number one, and he starts 12 to 14 games for the Jets, yeah. I mean, he's under center the first snap, and he is under center in the fourth quarter when the games and stuff matter the most. I believe that experience will pay huge dividends going into the future. Also, in certain situations, Jenna, I want to see if the ship is going down, if the play is bad, how bad he allows the play to be. And younger quarterbacks, we have seen this, trying to press, trying to force the play. The speed of the game is moving at a rate that they're not ready to play at. And most of these guys don't have great support staffs. That's why they're drafted so high. So when it gets bad, can he be the guy been like, listen, it's going to stop right here. I'm not going to throw that fourth or fifth interception. I will take a sack. I'll throw it out of bounds. I will punt. But ultimately, I want him healthy. I do not want to see 20 interceptions, and I do not want to see 45 to 50 sacks.
And Jameson Wentz, for the record, both played all 16 games their rookie year. Probably their most important stat that they were able to stay healthy.
What you don't want to see is a statistical season like we saw with the last first-round pick that the Jets had as a quarterback, Mark Sanchez, when he had 12 touchdowns to 20 interceptions. It can't look like that. And, CeCe, you made a point in talking about when things are breaking down around him, not making those mistakes. The thing that gives me confidence with Sam is what I've seen in the preseason so far. And you look at that first drive that he had against the Giants on that 3rd and 13, being able to convert it with his legs when there was nothing there, or the pass that he had outside of the numbers to Robbie Anderson to be able to convert on that first down that set up the touchdown, or the touchdown pass that he had to Terrell Pryor where he came off of his first two reads and worked the guy coming on the crosser from the backside of the formation. Those are the types of things that you want to see in terms of trying to evaluate the evolution of a young quarterback. And with Sam Darnold, you are concerned a little bit about the talent level around him on that offense. I'm not as much concerned with the wide receivers and the running backs as I am with the offensive line.
It's a shame you don't watch any football. So there's always two schools of thought when you have a rookie quarterback. Either you're going to throw him right in, let him play, let him learn on the job, or you're going to take the Baker Mayfield approach, let him sit, let him learn, let him figure it out before he gets thrown into the fire. They've obviously chosen to throw him in. How do you keep him from becoming the Mark Sanchez or becoming the Blake Bortles? Like, how do you?
Well, you got to protect him.
You have to protect him.
That's the thing. You got to try to keep him clean because you recognize with a young quarterback, defensive coordinators are going to throw the kitchen sink at him, especially early on in the season. And if you can't handle the blitz, then that could shake the confidence of your young quarterback. That's why I point to the offensive line being a concern. Kelvin Beachum has been out the majority of the preseason. Brian Winters has also missed a lot of the preseason. So your offensive line, in terms of communication and chemistry, that's going to be a big part early on in the season.
One of the big difference that Sam has, Jenna, and it's a valid point. How do you stop guys from being who Blake were and who Sanchez were? Well, you start off with a better mouth. You start off with more talent. This guy is a more accomplished thrower and has more arm talent than Mark Sanchez had and than Blake Bortles has right now. So your expectations for him, they should be higher than those guys. But, Jenna, if you put a young guy out there and you don't support him, it's on the board that their careers will be a lot like those other guys.
I'm gonna go further back to bring a different example because I don't think Bortles' career being mediocre at best has been because of the situation. I think it's because of him. I think the same with Sanchez.
Goff,
you saw the situation, but I'll go further back. A guy who I truly believe to this day could have had an excellent NFL career, sliding doors, and that's Derek Carr's brother, David. David Carr was, I thought, an outstanding prospect out of Fresno State. He gets he's the first pick for the Houston Texans, their first major pick for expansion franchise. The Texans thought they were going to protect him. They brought in Tony Boselli over in the expansion draft. Boselli never plays for him because of an injury. He got sacked. I was going to say 72, and I thought that was too high, and 76. So think about that. Chris is saying don't let him get sacked, 50. David Carr was obliterated and had a football version, like the football version of PTSD. Like, you can't recover from that. And so that, there are guys. I don't think Bortles or Sanchez, I think Bortles Sanchez would needed the perfect situation to be good. I don't think Darnold needs that. He needs to avoid the worst situation, and if we're being fair, as far as an offensive line standpoint and potential weapon standpoint, the Jets aren't the ideal situation. So that's up to the offensive coordinator and that staff to protect him.
Right. All right, Chris, stick around. Coming up, despite giving him a record-setting deal, are the Packers doing a disservice to Aaron Rodgers? Next. Back here with Chris Canty, the Green Bay Packers pulled the scene out of Hollywood and showed Aaron the money. A lot of money. Rodgers, the two-time MVP, became the highest-paid player in NFL history when he signed a 4-year, $134 million extension that, when all is said and done, could be worth $180 million in total money. That expression from the one and only Chris Canty. Canty, nobody would argue that Rodgers is as good as it gets, but have the Packers built the right team around him so that he can go out and do the one thing everyone is saying is keeping him from being the best ever, which is win another Super Bowl?
The short answer is no. And you look at Ted Thompson's track record in the draft, and you've seen that there are more hits I mean, more misses than hits in the draft. You could probably point to Nick Perry. You look at Ha-Ha Clinton Dix.
Yeah.
You know, Brian Bulaga. But that's about it in terms of what Ted Thompson has done in the last decade. So when you have an organization that takes on a philosophy of not being very active in free agency and going out and getting guys from other teams, you have to really hit on a lot of your draft prospects. And the Packers organization, they haven't done that. But what they do have is the best quarterback in the game from a skill set perspective, and Aaron Rodgers has mitigated a lot of those deficiencies on that roster. Now, they did a pretty good job of putting in a serviceable offensive line in terms of pass blocking. That group has graded out to be one of the best over the past decade, and he's always had weapons. But the one thing that you would point to is that defensive side of the ball. They haven't held up that end of the bargain, and that's really a loft issue, and that's on the general manager, which is probably why they forced Ted Thompson to step down and they got the new GM in place.
And I actually think some of the roster is worse than statistically it profiles out to, because everything that they're good at, Rodgers is a part of. Oh, they're actually a pretty good pass-blocking O-line when you look at it. Well, the quarterback has something to do with that. Just like sometimes when a pass-blocking O-line gets graded negatively, sometimes it's because the line stinks. Sometimes because the quarterback won't throw the damn ball away. Oh, we've seen they've done a really good job of developing wide receivers. Listen, a lot of those guys are good players, but they became the best versions of themselves. My friend Greg Jennings, Jordy Nelson, up to now Randall Cobb, they all got to be the best versions of themselves through Aaron Rodgers. The parts of the game that Rodgers can't control, the running game and the defense, is no shock where they've struggled. And to your point about the draft, since 2012, their first pick in every draft has been a defensive player. Tell me the stars. Nick Perry's fine. He's had a nice career. Yeah. Dayton Jones. Ha-ha Clinton Dix. There's a good
pick. Yeah, he's a Pro Bowl player.
Yep.
Demarius Randall, Kenny Clark, Kevin King, and we'll withhold judgment really on King's last year's pick, and Jair Alexander. But when you are not going to participate in free agency, well, now the draft is paramount. Not only because that's your only new influx of talent, but those are the guys that are going to stay on your team long term because they're not getting replaced with free agents.
And it's not as fair to the coaching staff, because these other coaching staffs, not only do they have a chance to develop their draft picks, but every once in a while you get that guy in the room where you just paid for him to be in the room, and how it helps develop those other younger players.
Chris. Absolutely, and also considering the draft as your best opportunity to get talented players at controllable cost. When you're paying your quarterback $33.5 million, you might want to have some young guys that you don't have to pay for a while. But in looking at the Green Bay Packers situation, this organization has done to Aaron Rodgers what should be considered the equivalent of franchise malpractice. It's absolutely ridiculous, the fact that this guy's only been in the big game one time in his career, to have the most talented quarterback that the game has ever seen, arguably, only be able to have one chance at winning a championship. That's an indictment on what they've done around him.
Can someone just please explain to me why they do not want to participate in free agency?
It was a Ted Thompson philosophy.
Right.
But he's gone now. Like, it's not like that is what the Green Bay Packers, because they're publicly owned, it's the rule.
It has nothing to do with that.
It was just, and you got to keep in mind, very early on in Aaron Rodgers' tenure, they won the Super Bowl. And so, and I think instead of doing the math we now do in retrospect and say, you know, one of the big reasons you won that Super Bowl was because you added Charles Woodson.
You did participate in free agency.
And you had a key player. And the year after winning the Super Bowl, they went 15-1. And then Tom Coughlin's purple face and the New York Giants beat them. And they went on to beat the Patriots in that Super Bowl. But so they haven't had, it's not like they've had no success. And for most teams, they would take the level of success the Packers have had, but most teams don't have 12. Yeah. Chris has a higher standard than I do of saying the best I've ever seen, probably because you've seen more than me. You've been watching longer, and even you think he's the best thrower of the football you've ever
seen. He is the best thrower. Him and Dan Marino. Mm. I mean, they can throw the football like people that we've never seen. Now, the thing about Dan, the difference between him and Dan is, if you watch the highlights of Aaron Rodgers, not like any quarterback we have ever seen, you will never see a quarterback who does not need to take a step. So you can rush me. You can be right in my face. He can deliver the ball from anywhere on the field with his feet almost parallel. Other quarterbacks have to launch it. They have to push off and go. Aaron doesn't. He makes most of his throws where his left foot is basically moving out of the way, because this is the steer leg, is moving out of the way compared to other guys who have to push and try to drive the football. Aaron, he can do it like no quarterback that I've ever seen before. And that's one of several things that he does on a high level.
And CC, when you have a quarterback like that as a defender, what it does is it lets me know that the complexion of the game is probably going to change sooner rather than later. Meaning I'm not going to have to play both, be honest with the opposing offense in terms of being able to have to play the run and the pass. He's going to make sure that defense is probably playing more pass defense just because the score is going to be one-sided.
You're talking about if you're a defender on the Packers.
On the Packers. But that's what I'm saying.
Defending him. Okay.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Aaron Rodgers makes opposing offenses one-dimensional just because they have to score so many points in order to stay in the game. So as a defender, it should make your job a whole lot easier. That's why it's a little bit of a head-scratcher that their defense has been so bad over the course of the last decade.
The greatest athletes in the world make the remarkable look ordinary. What you just described, Chris, Rodgers did that on that touchdown pass to Jimmy Graham in the preseason game. He's off the wrong foot. He's throwing across his body.
Yes.
Like, I mean, it is the type of, I mean, right there, everything you're talking about.
Kids at home, don't do this. You can't do this.
No.
And he can, and there isn't a throw he can't make. And I thought you illustrated it beautifully when we discussed this earlier, which is football fans in your mind's eye, just close your eyes and think about if you were creating a highlight reel of the last 20 years of passes, how many of those plays are this guy? Because I can think of a half dozen off the top of my head. As great as Brady is, like what his like
in Arizona in the postseason when he had those two throws on the drive that were Hail Mary passes to score a touchdown.
And so it's just he has been one of the consistent forces in the league since he took over for Favre. And it's worth noting he's doing it in Green Bay. In a division with eight games a year in Green Bay, you got a game a year in Soldier Field. To do it in those circumstances is crazy.
How big is the discrepancy between Aaron Rodgers and where the second, third, fourth, everyone else is currently playing in the league right now?
To me, it's Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, and everybody else. I mean, when you start talking about throwers of the football, those guys are on a whole nother level, and I think that their team's consistent success when they're on the field demonstrates that. So I think those are the quarterbacks that we should throw the word elite out there. Yeah. Everybody else, I think we need to take a step back and reserve that because those guys, they've earned that with what they've been able to do and the sustained success.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.